spirituality in midlife. The first one was waking up. The second one was letting go. And this session is called Savoring Our Blessings. So I thought we would start by doing that in song. So I'm going to start a little chant here that I guess many of you know, and if not, it's about 11 words long, even those of us whose brains aren't working quite as alertly as they used to at work. So, bless the Lord, my soul, and bless God's holy name. Bless the Lord, my soul, who leads me into life. If you know it, just join it. If not, join in a second.
Bless the Lord, my soul, and bless God's holy name. Bless the Lord, my soul,
who leads me into life.
Who leads me into life.
Three more times.
Bless the Lord, my soul. Much more aware of my body and where emotions and ideas are in my body and my own spirituality in my body. And so I invite you throughout this hour to be thinking about where do you experience gratitude in your body? And maybe the flip side of that is where do you experience other emotions in your own body? So I invite you to be thinking about that. And yesterday, our theme had to do with embracing our sorrows, and this really is a way to follow directly to that, because after we had had a chance and taken the courage and with the grace of God and the support of community and loved ones to hold our sorrows in life, there is a freedom that comes from that, and that frees us up to experience gratitude in our life and a deep pleasure in experiencing gratitude. And I want to start today by inviting you to just meet for a few minutes in twos or threes and tell the person next to you how in recent years have you been experiencing gratitude in your life, which you can name is a little different than, say, when you were 20. So, is that clear enough? How has your experience of being grateful changed as you moving later into life? So please just talk to two or three people for about 5 minutes. So I invite you, anyone, to just what of wisdom or of truth have you just heard? Either someone say to you, or what wisdom or truth did you hear come out of your own mouth about gratitude? So anyway.
I think Jennifer and I both agree that we're in gratitude for the small things. idea of these great, wonderful things we're going to do, but just the small things.
Right?
Yes.
Well, Terry and I were taking ourselves back a few years to a time, for example, in Princeton, saying, okay, in those younger years, what was gratitude for us? We were so busy pursuing life that there wasn't time for gratitude. It just wasn't a part of our lives. I mean, you're probably grateful, but you don't think about it.
Yeah.
And now, it's, you know, we're grateful for 54 years of marriage. We're grateful for body parts that move.
Right.
For a brain that can't remember names but still functions. I think it must grow as you get older, because you realize how much there is to be grateful for and ask us to do.
Thank you. That's beautiful. When we're younger, we're busy doing, aren't we? Yes.
I'm more grateful for my childhood than I think I was in my 20s. Back in my 20s, I was really still complaining, and woe is me, my dad died when I was 14. And, you know, this and that and another thing. And I'm much more grateful because I look back and I had a very nice childhood. You know, everybody was good to me, and I had all the food I needed and Christmas presents, and I'm just real grateful for it. And I just wish my parents were alive right now, so I could tell them, but they probably don't know. So.
Thank you. What did you hear of wisdom or truth from another, from yourself? Please, sir.
And my wife says, thank you for clearing the table. I'm touched.
Mm. How long have you been married?
A few years, 52.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
But just remembering to repeatedly say thank you for those things that others do rather than focusing on what they don't do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And a sort of dailiness of a thank you. You know, thank you for putting down my toast. Thank you for grinding the coffee. Small thank yous to the people you live with that you might not have thought of earlier. Someone else had to hand up. Anyone else? Please, Laura.
I find it's as much a discipline to be grateful. Went through a hard time in life where I very deliberately wrote out my gratitudes at life. And I think changed the whole attitude of life. Rather than hear what was going wrong, but be grateful for what was.
Yeah. So gratitude not only as an inclination and a sort of situational response, but as a practice, as a discipline.
Yeah. And a part of that also is to not only verbally, but also to take time to write.
Even best when it's on paper. People get real excited when they get a thank you
in the mail.
Because it's as if you're taking that extra bit of time. Yes, please.
Well, there's nothing like going to a third world country to make you grateful. And I think what I appreciated about my time in Guatemala was that all the externalities that we have here are stripped away there. And what was the most important there was hospitality and community. And that was just really a gift.
Thank you. We'll come back to this in a few minutes, but you've very successfully hit just about every theme I want to go at. Gratitude is one of those things that's both very simple, but the more deeply you look at it, the bigger and bigger it gets. I'm thinking the other night, you mentioned practice, Butch Thompson playing the rag, both flat and in syncopation, where any of you very awesome. You know, living life without gratitude is like living like this, with no, and what gratitude does to your life adds a buoyancy, a power. Thinking about Terrell this morning, talking about groundedness. Gratitude as a kind of groundedness to us, doesn't it? It's something that adds a vitality to life without which something very profound and deep is missing, right? So buoyancy. Some of its cousins, blessedness, a feeling of being blessed, a sense of peace, a sense of the goodness as well, of life. Life is good. Another cousin, I think, of gratitude is acceptance. A grateful heart is one that is able to say, this is the day the Lord has made. This is good. This is good. And I accept it. I accept all of it. Gratitude is able to accept. Practice of gratitude. I introduced the metaphor the other day of a wisdom trellis. A thing on which plants can grow, that at a certain point in life you realize you are responsible for your own growth and in which direction you're going to go. And so part of a wisdom trellis, I think, is the practice of gratitude. It will help to shape you as you go forward into life. It will do that. And so practice gratitude is a way of saying, this is one of the ways I want to grow, and practicing that. I remember many precious memories of Holden, but one of which was I was in a class with about 20 people in a Creekside room, and we were asked to break into small groups, and I think the theme that the teacher was teaching about the Psalms. And so we broke into small groups, and I was with one woman who I thought was very old. She was probably 70, which no longer sounds very old to me, but at 30-something it looked very old to me. And the psalm we were looking at was Psalm 23. And so we sat down and we were both quiet, and I said something about Psalm 23 that was not very memorable. And she sat for a moment and she said, well, Psalm 23 is a place for me. I can go there anytime I want. Bingo. There it is. A grateful heart that still waters. Presence of God, born up, given a feast, a place of being blessed. It's a place for me, Psalm 23. I can go there anytime I want. Never forgot that. Psalm 23. So there, as we think about this attitude of gratitude, I immediately began to think, what are the things that are the opposite? I can think of four. I'm sure you can think of more. One is the most obvious, taking things for granted. Someone in our small group said, it's a lot easier when you're younger to take things for granted. The parents, the childhood you had, or the schools you went to, or the health you were given, or it can go on and on. And that's an attitude of a younger person. And there's nothing the matter with that. But as you get older, you don't take things for granted as much. A spouse who can make my coffee. Taking for granted. Another opposite of gratitude, I think, is nostalgia. We talked about that the other day. Chekhov's great quote is, nostalgia is a longing for one's youth. Nostalgia is the opposite to gratitude because it's wishing I was back there. Either back there in time or back somewhere else. You can't have a grateful heart if you were wishing you were somebody else or somewhere else with some other person. And it's poisonous. Nostalgia can be very poisonous. You're not in the present. Expectations. One of the best sermons I ever heard was on the topic of expectations and what that can do in our life. You know, we come to hope and then we expect it's going to be, and it can fall short. You marry someone and you can have all sorts of expectations. You're basically painting a portrait of what you want and what you think is best for you. A job, take anything. You know, our expectations can often create a scenario for what we want instead of what God is going to be offering us, what the universe is offering us. And it'll fall short many times. And so expectations can clog a sense of gratitude. And the flip side is often, we just lost our power. Well, it's the birds better. I know. This happens even more in the winter. So, and practice keeps coming back to me. Practice and cultivation. We can cultivate an attitude of counting our blessings, an old expression which is very lovely, or we can cultivate weeds. In other words, we can cultivate bitterness, anger, all those things that are the opposite of gratitude. Nursing an anger at someone. Nursing a negative feeling toward ourselves. You know, you're never going to get it right, we can say to ourselves. That little Greek chorus on our shoulders that's always saying, you know, you just screwed that up again. You know? So it's not just negative things toward things on the outside, but our negative inclinations, our violence that we do to ourselves is the opposite of gratitude. If you're hating yourself, you're beating up on yourself, it's very hard to look outward in gratitude. There's an old story I've heard told several ways, but the way I remember it the best is an elder, native person elder, saying to his grandson, who's struggling very much, and he says, you know, there are two wolves living in you. There are two wolves living in you, and one is moving toward life, and the other one isn't, but they're both in you. And he said,
you may need to tell that story a little louder.
A little louder, okay. Two wolves living in you. And the child said, well, how do I know which one is me? And how do I know which one will grow? And he said, it's the one you feed. It's the one you feed. So what's the wolf that you are feeding at any given time? And generally, if one is trying to feed on a regular basis the heart of gratitude, giving thanks in all things, as we are encouraged in the Bible, giving thanks in all things, feeding that wolf. So I want to do a little bubble exercise that I came up with walking on the trail. I'm going to put gratitude in the middle. As I was thinking about gratitude, it was amazing how complicated it got. So I want to play a little game with you and just see this as best you can. And I'll get it started. And then you help. I was thinking about what are the things that feed an attitude of gratefulness. And one I came up with was humility. The ability to be grateful implies a sense of humility about life because it recognizes, I'm not in charge. I don't know it all. I can't make it happen. Life comes to me as a gift. Another thing that feeds gratitude that came to me was a sense of the preciousness of life and the essential, profound vulnerability of life. That creates a sense of gratitude. I remember my father, may he rest in peace, when I was a little girl, couldn't get to sleep at night. He'd play these little story games with me, and once he said, you know, if the sun were any closer to the earth, it would burn it up. And if the sun were any farther away from the earth, we'd all freeze to death. And he said, it didn't have to be, but God made it just right. You know, story like that, but it didn't have to be. There's so many things, and if you read modern science, there's so many things that could have gone a little differently in the early millennia of the planet. And it was just perfect. So that sense of gratitude that comes from the sense of another one. This is more the Aragonist. Gratitude gives us a sense of groundedness. I've not been practicing Tai Chi for years, but I have been practicing yoga for about 15 years. And so we stand on 1 foot two, just like the Tai Chi people. And I learned something very early on. Balance is very difficult for me in life as well as in my body. And I learned, voila, that if I'm standing on one leg and if I start thinking about who I'm really pissed off at or who I'm really worried about, afraid of, bam, I'm down. I'm just down. It's amazing how quickly the body responds. And if I'm standing on one leg and I'm either just breathing deeply or I'm deeply thankful for something, the balance is much more aligned. Isn't that interesting? I think gratitude gives us a sense of balance. So anybody else, what feeds this wolf? What contributes to gratitude?
Service.
Service, thank you. Service. How so? I mean, I'm guessing, but I want to hear you.
I think that I'm not sure if it's a catch-22 kind of a thing, which comes first, service or gratitude. Mm-hmm. I think that when you're grateful, you want to share, and so you serve. When you serve, you see how much you have that you're grateful for. Mm-hmm. Food pantry, you know, something like that, or cook anything.
Wonderful. Thank you. Anyone else? What opens and cultivates a grateful heart? Yes, Kathy.
Did somebody say forgiveness up there?
Forgiveness. Whoa, bingo. Thank you. Say more.
When I remember when I've been able to lay down the burden of carrying a grudge, that there's a sense of gratitude for that freedom. And I find it's not something that I do, you know, like they say, well, I have to forgive this person. It's not something that we can actively do. It's like a willingness to lay down the burden and then we wait for the grace of forgiveness. And it's so liberating to know that I don't have to have a time schedule, like I still have this many people to forgive.
Right.
It's like you just approach it with an attitude of willingness to let it go and then let grace come. With time.
With time. Thank you. David.
What about philanthropy, the joy of giving?
Mm-hmm. Say more. So financial.
Financial,
our time, our money, our talent.
Right.
Anyone else? Yes.
This might sound weird, but I think loss.
Mm.
I think you come to realize when you lose someone, it reminds you, brings everything up.
Tolerance. If you're tolerant of people, you're not judgmental and you become appreciative.
The divine in you recognizes the divine in you. Yeah. So tolerance. Gratitude towards someone that you don't like. Yeah. Carol.
Loss of that sense of entitlement when you realize that you've gotten more than maybe what you earned, and you haven't been punished for all the bad stuff you've done.
laughs at that one. I don't think I need to ask you to elaborate on that. So the gratitude that comes from recognizing you didn't deserve this, you didn't earn this. Many other good people don't have a bit of what.
Gratitude for my faith, my faith system, and my God, which makes me appreciate all those things that you put up there, and we see through that lens.
So the lens of faith.
It's interesting, too, full of agnostics or atheists, you would not be, generally would not be talking about any of this.
Well, I think for people of faith of whatever denomination or faith tradition, that sense that it's not only grateful for, but grateful toward, that none of this had to be, that, you know, praise God who's given us life, sustained us, and enabled us to reach this day, the gratitude toward as well as for, is profound. Yes?
Scarcity or a negative experience, for instance, you know, from the Depression, I'm more grateful for things because there's a scarcity, or you've had an abusive marriage and you marry somebody that's your soulmate, you're very grateful for that marriage. Another thought, what else?
Well, if that comes up, just shout out. So especially, you know, this happens when you've lived long enough. You've had, and so when you have, you recognize, whoa.
Oh, I remember when I'm at work in the lunchroom, somebody was complaining because our bonuses, our profit sharing, went down this last year. And this other lady said, they've never been laid off. I've been laid off. A bonus? So, when you, you know, when you haven't had.
Yes, sir.
Gratitude has a note of unworthiness, of sensing one's unworthiness. Because the dark side of gratitude is like the Pharisee. Thank God that I'm not like that sinner praying over there.
Just expanding on what Cleone said a minute ago about loss, I think when you've lived long enough so that some or much of something is taken away, you can experience more gratitude for what remains. I was telling my small group, I have a mother with a pretty nasty form of dementia, and in the rare opportunities when a glimpse of my old mother reappears, you know, it's just, you know, I'm overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude about that.
Now we'll keep coming back to my gratitude bubble. So here's what I want to play with is of all of these themes, including gratitude both as an experience and as a practice. And these are, that, those are kind of my themes. So here's one from W.B. Yeats, a wonderful poem that he wrote, and he'll tell you when. My 50th year had come and gone. I sat, a solitary man, in a crowded London shop, an open book, an empty cup, on the marble tabletop. While on the shop and street I gazed, my body of a sudden blazed, and 20 minutes more or less it seemed, so great my happiness that I was blessed and could bless. Sometimes an experience of feeling blessed or deeply in a place of gratitude comes unbidden. We're taking a walk. We're sipping a cup of coffee. Starbucks would love to read this. Or in a tea shop, in a crowded London shop. We're doing almost anything. A scent can come by and flood us with a memory so sweet that we've forgotten. And it leads to this river of gladness. So sometimes gratitude comes just simply as a gift, and it fills us with a tremendous sense of well-being. And I would suggest, here's an image for it. It's like a well of living water, right? The woman at the well. You know, gratitude is like a deep, nourishing water that we can sip from to sustain us in the midst of life. You know, here's a man I would suggest that to whom this was given as a gift. But most of the time, the gifts of this kind of grace come because we've cultivated the soil. We've been practicing. We've gotten up and said our morning prayer or our morning prayers. We've read this psalm, Bless the Lord, O my my soul. We've begun to cultivate that way of seeing and that way of being in the world. So when it is given to us as a gift, it can be 20 minutes or it can be 14 seconds, but it comes as a kind of tonic, I think, as a kind of balm. My 50th year had come and gone. I sat a solitary man in a crowded London shop, an open book, an empty cup. On the marble tabletop, while on the shop and street I gazed, my body of a sudden blazed. And 20 minutes more or less, it seemed so great my happiness that I was blessed. And then notice the last line, and could bless. Was blessed and could bless. So the experience of gratitude, another cousin to gratitude is joy. To feel completely flooded with gratitude is often a feeling of profound joy, of profound peace. One of the gifts of the Spirit. One of the gifts of the Spirit. So, a number of you have picked on the theme of simple, everyday blessings. And I like to think of my dog, Max, not only as my co-pilot, but my role model. Max is so happy if when I walk by him and he lies down with his belly open, I give him his breakfast. He's so happy. I take him for a walk. He's so happy. You know, the simple blessings of life. Many of them very much part of our rituals, like the wife setting the table, or the simple pleasures of taking a walk. And sometimes, as many of you have noticed, we notice it more when we haven't had it. You know, you sprain your ankle. You can't walk for 6 weeks. You don't know how good it feels when you can, all of a sudden, just putting weight on your foot. Praise the Lord. Get gratitude for that. Terrell was talking about the beauty of our wrist. Oh, you've had tendonitis. And you've got a good body worker who can work it out. The pleasure of lifting something. So simple. Everyday pleasures, and as we get older, we don't take these things for granted. We really don't. There's a consciousness about simply moving around that isn't typical of when you're in, say, your 20s, or say, if you're of normal health. You just kind of go do it. I have a friend who, not a friend, someone I met, Eric and I took our 10th anniversary hiking in the Southwest, and there was a woman there on this one hike we did in Arches who looked about my age, maybe a little older. She had a daughter who was nowhere near as fit as she was, as a matter of fact. And we were hiking, and it was a place where you came to a rock, and there was another rock. If you wanted to, you could jump. And both of us stood there, and we both started laughing. And she said, there was a time in my life I would just jump. And she said, I could probably do it now, but I'm going to sit down on this one. And so she sat down, and we both kind of crawled across. And she said, at my time of life, everything's low and slow. She knows she doesn't want to injure herself, you know? She could probably make that jump. She really wanted to. She had for decades, but she wasn't going to do it because she knew, you know, sprained ankle at 58, probably not fun. So dinner, a good meal. Here's a beautiful thing from Suma Kidd. Again, this wonderful book I would recommend. When the Heart Waits, this wonderful.
Is that book in the bookstore?
I ordered it, yeah. Is it?
No, that was my question. Is it in the bookstore now?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. Yes. So, gratitude for the simple, wonderful little short story. She described an experience of her own life, and then she talks about a man she interviewed in Columbia, South Carolina, who had been blind from birth. Quote, late in his life, he underwent an operation that restored his sight. When the bandages were removed, the first thing he saw in his whole life was a tiny tear-shaped drop glistening at the end of an eyedropper. He told me, that drop was the most awesome, beautiful thing. It filled me with gratitude. A drop? But if you're a blind man, so that sort of suggests that we almost cultivate a hunger in life and an openness to life, so that a sip of water, for some of you who've been in developing countries, turning on water, whoa, having it come out, and it's drinkable. Pleasure, for those of us in Western Washington, the pleasure of sun on your face. You come to Seattle in about April or May when the sun comes out and you see all of these Seattleites walking around looking slightly dazed. So simple, quotidian, you know, daily gifts of from ordinary time. Gratitude based on a sense of the preciousness and contingency of life. That we've talked quite a lot about that, that sense that it didn't have to be. Gratitude coming from a place of being awed at beauty. Beauty is one of those things that provokes gratitude. And since we are in Holden Village, in this beautiful valley, I'm moved to talk about beauty of the natural world as being an occasion for gratitude. And often when I work with people in parishes or in spiritual direction, they will often speak of the presence of God and the response of deep gratitude, awe at the beauty of the world. So this is Mary Oliver, Morning in a New Land. In trees still dripping night, some nameless birds woke, shook out their arrowy wings and sang. Slowly, like finches sifting through a dream, the pink sun fell like glass into the fields. Two chestnuts and a dapple gray, their shoulders wet with light, their dark hair streaming, climbed the hill. The last mist fell away. And under the trees, beyond time's brittle drift, I stood like Adam in his lonely garden on that first morning, shaken out of sleep, rubbing his eyes, listening, parting the leaves like tissue on some vast, incredible gift. That notion that we are not only grateful to and for, but toward our Creator. And in that sense, we are back in the garden. We are in our own origins. We are in our own innocence. Gratitude is a form of our own innocence. And how much deeper it becomes as we go forward in time. What a gift that is. What a gift it is to grow older, to have that gratitude be more profound, more deep, more humble, more joyful, more fragile. And we also have experience of living in all of its opposites and know enough of hell on earth from those experiences of living without a grateful heart. So a few things about time, speaking of which. Gratitude sometimes means looking back. So a few just images I will suggest. Harvest, that's a great word to play with, harvest. Thinking about the work we've done, the children we've raised, thinking about those things which are a part of what we have been able to offer. It's very easy at this time or any time of life to think about what we've left undone, and especially sometimes as people of faith, we can think of that a little too much, I think. But thinking about the harvest of what we have done in our life and gratitude for that. Perspective and savoring. There's where I want to go. Savoring. I was talking to a friend actually from Holden a few weeks ago before I came, and she had the opportunity to take a trip and see one of her children that she hadn't seen for a long time. And circumstances in this person's life have been such that travel has not been something that she can just pick up and do. So this was a very special trip and a very beautiful place, and seeing her son and seeing some beautiful things in the place that she was. And we saw each other about a week later, and she said, "You know what I've been doing all week?" And I said, "What?" She said, "I've been just savoring every moment over and over again." So going back, savoring as a form of gratitude in terms of looking at the past, can you go back to an experience and not wish you were there anymore? It's not nostalgia. It's not bitterness. It's none of that. But just savor. Can you go back? And often when you may call on people in your congregation or talk to people much older than you in your own family, how do they think about their past? Are they savoring it? That can make a happy person. And so this friend of mine was talking about reliving moment after moment and just savoring it. This is a person probably not going to take another trip for a while. So looking back as a kind of savoring. Let's look. I thought we have more time to do this, but let's look at Psalm 103. If yes, Psalm 103. If you want a primer in gratitude, open up the Psalter just about anywhere. And some of them are officially songs of thanksgiving, and so it's a primary theme, but many of them have other themes, but thanksgiving is there in there somewhere. And the practice of reading the Psalter has been, for me, and I know for many, one of the best ways, particularly if you're in the mood where gratitude is not coming easily to you. And that's another very good spiritual practice, is practicing gratitude when you're not feeling it. C.S. Lewis was wonderful on this, about why do people worry about feeling all the time? He obviously was a thinking type. But the practice of gratitude when you're not feeling it is very, very important. It often can crack open places in your own pain, but also your own joy from practicing the practice of gratitude, even when you're not feeling it. And so if you're not, if it's coming with difficulty, read a psalm. So let's read this together as a way, and then I have a couple other things we can do. So how many love this psalm? Is everybody up? This is one of my favorites. Is this anyone one of your favorites? I just love this. Okay, I'll read verse 1 and you all respond it too, and we'll keep it up. So bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name.
Bless the Lord, O my soul, and do not forget all his benefits.
Forgives all your iniquities and heals all your diseases.
Redeems your life from the dead, who crowns you with steadfast love and mercy.
Who satisfies you with good as long as you live, so that your youth is renewed like the eagles.
The Lord works vindication and justice for all who are oppressed.
He made his ways known to Moses, his acts to the people of Israel.
The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love.
He will not always accuse, nor will he keep his anger forever.
He does not deal with us according to our sins, nor repay us according to our iniquities.
For as the heavens are high above the earth, so great is his steadfast love toward those who fear him.
As far as the east is from the west, so far he removes our transgressions from us.
As a father has compassion for his children, so the Lord has compassion for those who fear him.
For he knows how we are made. He remembers that we are dust.
As for mortals, their days are like grass. They flourish like a flower of the field.
For the wind passes over it, and it is gone, and its place knows it no more.
But the steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting
on
those who fear him, and his righteousness to his children, to children's children.
To those who keep his covenant and remember to do his commandments.
The Lord has established his throne in the heavens, and his kingdom rules over all.
Bless the Lord, O ye his angels, you mighty ones who do his bidding, obedient to his spoken word.
Bless the Lord, all his hosts, his ministers that do his will.
Bless the Lord, all his works, in all places of his dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul.
There's a number of themes we haven't even touched that are in here. Help me identify them. What's in here that we haven't talked about that strikes you as part of the practice of gratitude? And again, especially as you think about this season of your life.
One thing is that there's angels that do our bidding, and we perhaps don't acknowledge that very often.
Yeah.
Mm. Wonderful. The unconditional love of God. Mm. And that's what we do.
Yeah. Unconditional love. One of my favorites in this one, and you see it in a lot of other songs as well, that sense that when we are blessing and thanking God, we're joining with all creation. We're joining with seen and unseen. We're really joining the heavenly chorus which the morning stars began. That as we bless and thank God, we are part of a much bigger choir that we are joining that is not seen and not heard, but we join it. And we take that energy with us as we praise and thank God. Yeah. Anyone else? What stands out to you here?
That image of the kind of the tenuousness of life, you know, that he knows we're dust.
Right. The days are like grass. The days are like grass, but so often in the Psalms, and then there's our days are like grass with the steadfast love. One of the things, and I'll talk about it more tomorrow when we talk about bodies, is that I'm finding in this chapter of my life that movement and breath and heart are much more involved in sort of the ongoing conversation with God in my life. And one class at the parish I most recently served, we had a young woman who was getting her MFA at the University of Washington, and has done a lot of work in movement and prayer with churches. And so she came for an Advent class, and I'm grinning because Eric knows this story. She had us do just simple exercise. She's reminding people, because of course she's built like a dancer, and everyone thought, oh, I don't want to go to that. And she said, it doesn't matter what your health is like, you can come. And she just took us through some very simple motions, like she invited people to close their eyes, and hold out one hand and to just imagine the things in their life that were painful and difficult and dark. And she left us there for a while. And then she said, open up your other hand and close your eyes and think on your blessings. Think on your gratitudes. Think of your joys. There was something about just holding a hand out in gratitude that made it such a profound experience. And then, at some point in the class, can you remember the exact context, Eric? She took her hands together as if coming forward for
communion.
Right,
coming forward, you know, you have your pain and your blessings, and you put them together when you come to the table.
Yes, thank you. And all of us, much of us, just burst into tears. It was so powerful. You know, so simple ways of using your body as you think about gratitude, a gesture. I encourage you to think about that as you move into this chapter of your life, to find ways to to show your gratitude with simple motions, because it engages a level of you that'll give you more with which to praise God and to thank God. Praising God with your hand. So we're almost done. I want to play something from Mary Preuss. I'll meet you, Mary Preuss. Wonderful Lutheran. Lives in the Twin Cities, I think. One of the things we've touched on a little bit, but we could do a lot much more about, is sort of gratitude for the goodness of life, for the world, for all of the world, despite the suffering of people whose lives are much more difficult than mine is, the suffering of people in the Gulf of Mexico whose waters have been destroyed. Some of you heard about it. But it's 2 weeks into that disaster. A ship captain took his own life. And he left a note and said, "Everything I've worked for and loved is gone." So what is the practice of gratitude look like when we're able to hold the suffering of the world? It's one thing to begin to grapple with this as we look at our own life. But when we try to hold out the suffering of the Lord, the cross of Christ, how do we hold that gratitude for the goodness of the world? And so here's a song. We actually sang it a few nights ago, but here is sung by Mary Preuss. I hope I got this right. Okay, we need a person who can move this forward. Forward. When the power went out, I lost it. Life goes on in endless song, above earth's lamentation. Who helped me here? I hear the real, though far-off song that hails the new creation.
No storm can shake my inmost calm. When to that rock I'm clinging, since Christ is Lord of heaven and earth, how can I be?
Every verse to that beautiful hymn, you can find it in the ELW. That's a song that we have to sing in our heart on a regular basis, right? When we look at the world. How can we keep from singing? Holding that cross and resurrection cup before us at all times. Cultivating that deep gratitude that doesn't know how the story's going to come out. You know, I think one of the things that I'm certainly more aware of at 56 than I was at 26. Because, you know, I'm going to be here a certain number of years, but my kids, my grandkids, you don't think about grandkids when you're younger. What you do as you get older, and the world, and where this world is going. So a song, how do you keep that song in your heart and have a grateful heart as you, in a sense, surrender this good world to the next generation? So thank you all. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll talk about bodies, unless anyone has a last comment or two before any last bit of wisdom from you wise people.